welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Temperatures across the nation have been, 20, 40 degrees above normal for this time of year, but tonight they are headed into more familiar territory with a frost warning in effect. What needs saving? What can survive? And when food planting season finally does really arrive, what are our options? What works in the kitchen? Joining us today to talk about all of that is Ohio's garden sage, author, teacher, blogger, and garden consultant, Deborah Knapke. Welcome back, Deborah.
Nice to be here.
And also with us today to take the process a step further into the kitchen is Edible Columbus editor-in-chief and publisher and chef trained at the French Culinary Institute in New York City, Tricia Wheeler.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, Tricia. Thanks. Tricia wants to make sure that we all know that she is not a gardener. Her husband is, however. And she, I'm sure, is the dictator of what goes in the garden since she gets to cook it up. So that's why we have Tricia on. Plus, they have their brand new 2-year anniversary issue of Edible Columbus out, issue number 9, spring 2012. It's hard to believe it's been 2 years.
I know. And this is our first theme issue, and it's a special garden issue. And
she knew she was coming on the program, so she planned a special, not really, but it is a special garden issue. It's a big fat issue, as usual. It's beautiful, as usual. So I highly recommend it to everybody out there. If you have a question or comment, I wanted to spend the first segment talking first about this frost that's coming tonight, because I have things I want. Because it's all about me. 614-292-8513. If you want to make it about you, give us a call. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. And you can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU if you have questions about gardening, what to plant, and what to save tonight. So, Deborah Knapke, let's get to the weather first. There's a frost warning. What are the most vulnerable plants? There's so much out now that isn't usually out, so
I would say that just about everything is vulnerable. It depends on how deep the frost gets. If we just touch into the 36, 35, 34, 32, we're okay.
Really?
We go there and stay there all night long, get down to 32, 30, we will start seeing more damage, more freeze burn. You're going to see that most of all. A lot of the spring plants that are out now are used to this up and down. But I will tell you, I looked out my window this morning and I'm thinking, this is my April 15th to 20th garden that's in bloom.
I'd say it's like 2.5, 3 weeks ahead.
My magnolias are open. There's nothing I can do. I cannot cover them with a sheet. I could, if I was really nuts about it, put smudge pots underneath and do fogging heat, but I'm not going to do that. The people who are shaking in their boots are the fruit growers.
Okay, I have my brand new baby cherry tree, which, we've been talking about this for a year now. And it has little blossoms coming. Now, they haven't actually blossomed, but you can see the buds.
Right.
Can I cover that up and save it?
Sure. Okay. I put a sheet over it if you can. I mean, if it's a little one, you can do that. Just make sure that you're not bending your leader. So if you really want to do this right, and it's a small tree, you get some sticks that are bigger.
Okay.
You shove 3 sticks in the ground, then throw the sheet over. And I tie rocks in the 4 corners so that it doesn't blow off at night. So you just take a rock and tie it in the corner, and that holds it down.
What if you just put an umbrella over it? Would that help or
not? How in the world are you going to connect an umbrella to your tree?
Well, I mean, you can
I could move my
table out there.
Okay. Are you going to stay up all night with your cherry tree?
I really want that cherry tree.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I know I'm only going to get 12 cherries off of it, but gosh darn it.
It's one of those things that tonight for me is tough love. I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and say, okay, who made it? Because I have so much in bloom in my garden now. The daffs will be fine.
Oh, they'll survive.
Oh, yeah.
Well, some of them are already dying off anyways.
Right.
They've been
the
out
early
for so
ones.
Long.
And the tulips and the hyacinths.
You might get some burn.
Okay. Yeah.
You might get some burn on your bud tips or your leaf tips, depending on how tender they are. So it's one of those, there's nothing I'm going to do differently tonight. Now, if someone was crazy and planted their annuals, you better get your sheets out there.
They haven't been listening to this show.
That's right. But I mean, I have primulas in bloom. They love the frost. They'll have no problem at all. So I'm thinking, hey, bring it on, Mother Nature.
Is your husband worried about anything in particular, or is he a vegetable garden and just hasn't gotten anything in yet,
yes,
Tricia?
Yes, exactly. We've mm-hmm. got things in grow little pots and seedlings and stuff like that all inside, but we don't have anything yeah. outside except he was really great this year and planted a million bulbs, so we have a whole big tulip tulip and mm-hmm. a daffodil garden and hyacinths going, but that's all we have up.
They should be okay.
What about azaleas and rhododendron? I'm shocked always at some neighbors down the street from me. Their azaleas are already out, which ours mm-hmm. never come. Ours still are not even close to coming out. So what do I do? They have the buds.
They have the buds. If
cover
you
them?
Are concerned, you could cover them with a sheet again. We have a lot of old sheets, and they never die. They just go into the garden, and they're used for all kinds of things until they rip apart so much I can't use them anymore.
Uh-huh.
You can cover them. I think the azaleas will come through okay unless you have new leaves. I think the new leaves could get burned. But if it's just buds, I think they'll do okay. But the leaves could be an issue.
Listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, we're talking about the weather and gardening. The two, you can't talk about one without the other, particularly these days. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd like to morph it into a conversation about gardening for food, which is why we invited Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief for Edible Columbus, with us, and Deborah Knapke, Ohio's garden sage and author, can talk about it all. Roses?
Roses.
Strangely green.
They're out.
Yeah.
They are out. I didn't even have time to trim them this year before they came out.
Right.
You're going to get some leaf burn.
Okay.
But they'll break again.
And dogwoods?
I'm not worried about
okay.
dogwoods.
And, my next question is this edition of Edible Columbus. So let's turn to our callers now. Beverly in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beverly.
Hello. I have a question for Deb regarding lavender, because I know that she's has expertise in this area.
Hi, Bev.
Hi. Just heard a speaker that recommended that you prune lavender down before Christmas to about 2 inches.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I would like to know when and how you recommend pruning lavender.
You get 10 gardeners in a room and you get 10 different ideas, but here's mine. You don't hard prune lavender at all during the winter season, the fall or winter season. It's a subshrub. If we get a warm, like we've had this warmth, it's going to push out new growth, which will be nipped by frost. Lavender will be. So I prune heavily after the first bloom to shape it. If there's anything dead in it at any time of the year, take that out. But after the first bloom in June is when I cut off the shape it, make it the way I want it, do hard pruning. But I have never taken a lavender down to 2 inches above unless I know the upper growth is dead. In some lavenders, you'll get new growth from the bottom. In others, you will not. It depends on which species it is. And sorry for my voice fading out.
Thanks, Beverly. Good question. I feel better now.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Here's a question from Terry about the frost. Welcome to the show, Terry from Newark.
Hi. My question was, I have spears already up. I've got an extensive asparagus bed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And besides picking the spears that have come through, because I know the frost would affect them, mm-hmm. should I cover the bed?
If you're not going to pick the spears, I would cover the bed. If they're just coming out of the ground, I would, as I mentioned to Anne, put some sticks in so that what you're covering does not touch the spears. Because if they do and it frosts hard outside, you're going to burn that tip, which is the tasty part of the asparagus. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you do not have whatever you're covering laying on the spears themselves. But
okay.
They probably will be okay. But I would cover them.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You were going to say something, Tricia?
Tricia Wheeler?
No, I was just going to say it's really, my daughter would love to be out there building these little tents with the rocks and the spears. So this could be a fun project for the whole family.
Thinking of alternative things you could do, like you could take a folding chair
mm-hmm.
if you have a low-lying
yeah.
plant. And
perfect.
You could put the folding chair over it, and then you could put like a curtain, sheet over that. Mm-hmm. If you want to cover up all the way around, I guess is what you want to do. And that's what I was thinking of kind of with the umbrella. I mean, you could take an umbrella and you could take it out there on its stand.
Okay.
And you could kind of put it over whatever thing you want.
And
you
then that
draping.
Work.
I'm trying to think of, you know, I'm trying to think.
Well, I know, and to make it easy, because if it's going to be too difficult, people aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get one more call in. Becky in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thank you. So here's the short story.
Okay.
A long time ago, we had a bed at the corner, down by the sidewalk. It had lilies and tulips and other things in it. Then we planted a tree, and of course the tree grew, and over time it shaded the bed, and the tulips and the lilies would emerge but not bloom, and then they quit emerging. And so last fall I was changing that bed, and I'm digging, I found a lot of the bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
I transplanted them to sunny spots.
Good.
The tulips have come up, most of them,
mm-hmm.
but I have no buds on them, and some of them only have one large floppy leaf. Will they ever bloom again? Would bulb fertilizer help? Should I just put them in the compost pile?
Okay. Tulips, depending on what type they are, a lot of times they are good for 1 or 2 years at the most, and then they're done.
Okay.
So I don't know what kind of tulips you have.
I don't remember now
either. But some of the species, whatever, they bloom for many, many years. If you have those big, beautiful hybrids, they're the ones that last 1 to 2 years. If you're coming up with one floppy leaf, probably they are not going to bloom. You'll need to see two leaves come up, at least two.
Okay.
I would put down some great compost and let those leaves photosynthesize, send energy back to the bulbs.
Give them another year.
And if they don't come back up, they're going to compost right there in the soil without you digging them up.
Right.
And then you wouldn't have had to do that.
Okay.
So do it all, yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Becky.
All right, and I have a suggestion for people trying to cover up. You were trying to think outside.
Yeah.
How could you do that? If you have some large 5-gallon bucket,
mm-hmm.
if you had 3 or 4 of those, you could easily put those around the perimeter of the plant and then put your blanket or sheet over that. If you have stones or rocks that you could then put on the top of the buckets, then that mm-hmm. would keep the blanket there from blowing off.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Becky.
You're welcome. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Tulips. The tulip bulbs that I have coming up year after year for some reason, they're kind of these ruffly ones. Kind of feathery.
Are you lucky? The pear
feathery
tulips?
Yeah, I think that's what
they are.
Oh,
I'm envious.
And they just keep popping up. I don't know.
You got a good strain then.
I never had that before because I usually think, tulips are such a hassle because they don't come up every year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. That's how lazy I am. If you have a question or comment for us, we are talking about food gardens. Now, we'll take questions about other stuff, but we're particularly interested in food gardens and how to get started with that and what to do and what to shoot for. My guests are Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief for Edible Columbus, and also Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage, author of several books and a consultant and a teacher. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the U.S. Army is investigating reports that Army doctors changed PTSD diagnoses to send American soldiers back into battle. We'll dig in. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Later today, this evening beginning at 8, tune to 89.7 NPR News for special coverage. The U.S. Supreme Court considers the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, President Obama's signature health care law. Listen to a recap of the day's arguments tonight at 8 on 89.7 NPR News. 44 degrees in downtown Columbus, mostly sunny skies with a high near 50 degrees today. Clear skies tonight, a low right around 30 degrees. Some sunshine for Tuesday and a high near 60. A slight chance of rain Tuesday night, a low of 50 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The weather is monkeying with us, but we decided to go ahead with our program, all the more pertinent because of the weather, really. My guests were talking about planting food gardens with Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief for Edible Columbus. Tricia, once again, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you.
And also Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage, author, consultant, blogger, teacher extraordinaire, Deborah Kanapke. Deborah, thanks again, as always, for being with us.
Love being here.
So we're going to get some of the calls. But, well, let's see. This one is a weather one. Tom and Marion, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yes, good morning. I have a question for Deborah. Is it true what I've heard and read that you should not put plastic film over plants to protect them from frost?
I never use plastic. I use something that will breathe, because if for some reason you don't get out there tomorrow morning before 11 o'clock, and if we get a sunny day, you're going to cook your plants, because that's what the plastic will do, and it just doesn't breathe. And you're just risking bacteria and fungi. Pathogens. We've had a wet year, and they're just waiting to attack.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Good question. Okay, so what can we plant early? Do we even consider this early anymore, or what, because of what the weather's doing with all these record-breaking?
I'm not sure what we call this, truthfully. I'm waiting to see what we call this year.
Record-breaking year already.
In fall, I'll tell you what I'm going to call this year, but I'm already I planted my peas.
Okay.
Radishes could go in. A lot of your brassica crops.
Which is?
Brassica are your cabbages, your kale, your kohl, what we call our kohl crops. Some people like to start them early. Start your broccoli, your Brussels sprouts in your four packs inside. Get them going. And then when I like to put things out between April 1st and April 10th, for what I call my brassica, my cabbage, yummy, yummy greens crops. Your mizuna, Asian greens could go out. One of my favorite things to eat all year long. A friend of mine, well, actually, Michael Leach.
Mm-hmm. One of your bloggers.
Fellow bloggers. He gave us bags of kale at our last meeting 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Not kale, collards from his garden.
Okay.
He put some Rimei over them, and they've been growing all winter.
So what about all those kinds of greens, Tricia Wheeler?
I was so excited. I was out at Stratford Ecological a week ago, and you can harvest for $4 a pound. You can harvest greens out of their big greenhouse, and I felt like it was Christmas morning, so it was so fun. So I was able to just go in. They give you the scissors, and you just cut down what you like, and it was so nice to have that, which I would love to think about doing something on in my backyard to extend the season. We were talking about that briefly, but the greens, I love all those types of greens that for cooking purposes, they're wonderful for quick sautés, mixing them. I love to mix them with grains, like a quick farro and green sauté with some garlic. Wonderful.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, I knew this was going to happen.
Those early salad greens. And I had a question, Deborah, about the radishes. I love those long French breakfast radishes. Is there any advice different when planting the different varieties of radishes?
You really need, for the long ones, friable soil. Put a lot of compost to make sure that it's not our typical clay soil, because then you'll get the roots going like this and stunting and forking. And so that beautiful long radish that you're hoping for on the plate is going to look like this.
Okay. Does that explain sometimes when you get forky-looking carrots and stuff, too?
Because I try to push through the soil so they split to try to find the holes to go in. And they just, or they hit a rock or something, so they go around it, because plants do that. They adapt. Adjust.
And you can start getting your seeds together for
now. With carrots, don't plant those outside yet.
Okay. You're seeding them indoors.
Right. And they're a taproot. I like to seed my carrots outside. Okay. I know some people seed them early. That's a personal preference. I've just never been successful with seeding inside and then planting outside because of the taproot issue.
Okay.
You mess with that, and then it says, fine, I'm going to fork. If you bother that root, it's going to split.
We had an adorable picture of two carrots on our Facebook page at Edible Columbus, and they were hugging each other, and it looked like they had grown arms around each other, and we
That's
said two
cool.
carrots that love each other.
Oh my! I still have a picture of some that looked, they had their legs wrapped
yeah.
around each other. They weren't arms, they were legs, and same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I kept it. They were like doing, they were like doing ballet or something together. So that,
now
that,
we know
exactly
why.
What I was thinking of when I thought of that. So kale is superfood.
Oh, it's incredible.
So,
so Tricia, tell us, how do you particularly people tell me they get tons of kale when they do their subscriptions and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a good fix for
kale. Okay, a good kale. This is my favorite. I call it kale massage salad. And I take a Ziploc bag and I put the shredded kale. I take the rib out of the middle and I squeeze a fresh lemon in there and do kind of a good bunch of kale in there and cut it up into some... not bite-sized pieces, but kind of chunks, and then add a juice of a lemon, a big good squeeze of fresh local honey, grind of salt and pepper, and some olive oil, and then just sit there and massage. Get the air out of the bag and then just sit there and massage it. It cooks the kale while it's massaging into it, and it turns into this nice kind of touch of sweet, touch of citrus, and it's a cold salad. You can put it, you can massage it, put it in the refrigerator, and then pull it out at dinner time. I put all the ingredients in the bag and hand it to my daughter, and she massages it, and she's helped with dinner. So, and every time I teach that recipe, people love it.
So it takes that bitterness out of it.
It
can be tough on
it. It breaks down.
Sometimes.
It almost looks like you've cooked spinach
okay.
after you've massaged it down, and it's a good stress reliever too.
Yeah,
so.
I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, Melissa in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Hi, I really love this topic. I'm sorry, my question doesn't have to do with food, but I do have a gardening question. I have a beautiful wisteria plant. It's like a bush, and it has long, beautiful vines and tendrils that mm-hmm. grow, and I keep it really, you know, trimmed, and I have it trained to a trellis. And it bloomed the first year when I bought it from the nursery, but then last year it didn't. So I'm wondering, what can I do to have it bloom this year? Am I supposed to prune it at a certain time? I'm not sure.
Wisterias can be temperamental. When you get those long, wingy things, it sounds like you're doing the right thing. Prune it back to where you have about 4 to 5 buds, but
okay.
really hack it back. Wisterias, if they grow too much out, they will put so much of their energy into growing leaves that they don't put them into the flowers. Also, sometimes they just don't bloom, and I don't know why. If that continues, you can do what we call root shock therapy. You can, in the spring, take your shovel and in about 3 places around the root ball, make a deep vertical cut that stresses the roots and for some reason seems to shock it into bloom. Doesn't always work, but it works more often than not. So
well,
try
it's so
that.
Strange. It seems like no matter what I did to it, it just grows more.
Yes, you need to keep those wingy things back. You really need to. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Melissa. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Deborah Kanapke.
Yeah, one thing. One of the things I love to do is throw some kale in at the end of when I'm roasting vegetables.
Mm-hmm. I love that,
the last
too.
5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so all the roasted vegetables have caramelized and everything. Just throw a handful on top, mix it in, 5 minutes, then serve.
So nice. Oh.
There's so many ways to eat kale and collards.
Well, there ought to be because whenever anyone subscribes, they get
They're
a ton
so,
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy. It must be easy to grow
mm-hmm.
and easy to eat.
And it's so delicious
Super
and so
nutritious.
Good for you. And
yeah.
I think people are always surprised with just a good saute and just shallots or garlic and just a squeeze of fresh lemon, how good it really is.
Yeah.
And if it's a hardier green, we always teach this also, that a collard or if it's something that's not as tender or a hardier kale, you can always do a parboil for a minute mm-hmm. or 30 seconds first and then take it and saute it. Just
okay.
to break it down a little bit, make it more tender.
I'm going to try that massage technique, mm-hmm. though.
We're having that tonight.
Yeah.
I've already decided.
Done. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to join the conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about food gardens, preferably today. If you have other questions, we'll take them. But food gardens with Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief for Edible Columbus, and also Deborah Kanapke, better known as Ohio's Garden Sage. We have links to both of their links to Deborah's new
blog,
the which
Heartland
is
Gardening.
Called The Heartland Gardening, which you do with Michael Leach and
Teresa Woodard.
Right. And we also have a link to Edible Columbus as well. Their new edition is out, their second anniversary edition, and it's the first dedicated edition. It's the garden issue.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Thank
I just
you.
Flipped through it, and it's gorgeous.
Thank you so
it
much.
Is. It's a very beautiful. It's always been beautiful from the very beginning. And let's see, Danny in Columbus, coming your way. Hi, Danny. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling about butterfly plants.
Okay.
I transplanted three of them, and the first one, two of them took place. I mean, took to the new transplanting in the backyard, but the third one didn't. It doesn't have buds on it or anything. And I'm wondering, and I put dirt from the old, where I took it from the old planting,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering why it didn't take.
Well, this is the woody plant, correct? Butterfly bush that gets long flowers on it?
Right, Danny?
Panicle?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't tell you why the third one didn't take. I would give it a chance, though. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer for buds to come on. This was really too early this year for buds to be coming on, so maybe the third plant is smarter if it's not dead. but you might get some tip burn tonight on those two other butterfly bushes. But it will re-sprout because it's a tough, tough plant. You're just going to have to sit and watch to see if the third one will. Come up. But two-thirds, two out of three, not bad.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. Thanks, Danny, for the call.
Oops,
sorry for cutting you off there. We have an email from Cynthia. She says, I couldn't refrain from purchasing four plants each of spinach and broccoli, which have been growing happily in my garden for 3 weeks. Do I need to protect them tonight? My lettuce is up about a quarter inch. Please advise.
I don't know how mature the spinach is. Spinach and broccoli will both go through a frost, as long as it's not a hard frost. The lettuces should too, but for my lettuces, because I would not want to lose them and they're so short, I would probably put some sticks in the ground and throw a sheet over it tonight, just in case. If it goes below 32, you might get more burn than you would
who
want.
Who wants to lose those lettuces at
this
point? Yeah,
I know. And
it's the
that
best.
Hard work, no.
And the thing is sometimes I learn things because I didn't do them, like put over, but I didn't get my lettuce seed out yet, so I can't tell you exactly, because probably I'd cover half and not half and
just see what happens.
But that didn't happen before I went out of town last week.
Trisha Wheeler, what is your favorite early season crop? What do you look forward to?
I look forward to the radishes. I love to make radish butter we featured in our first issue, and that recipe's online. I love to make, just a great little toast point with the radishes fanned out and nice sea salt and a nice herbed, cheese below it. I think that's really nice. I look forward to those, and I love peas. I love when I can get shelling peas, or I remember in New York having these really great fava beans that I loved getting early, and I think those are really nice, too.
Ava, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ava.
Hi. I want to talk about moving a dogwood that's been in the ground about 5 or 6 years, but it's been shaded by two houses. It's only about 6 feet tall. It's too close to one house. I mean, very close.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to move it, and I wonder what the best procedure is to do that.
How wide is the canopy?
Oh, maybe 4 or 5 feet. It's not very
okay.
tall.
That's going to be one heck of a big root ball. So I hope you have some young, strong men and women that can help you dig the root ball and then transplant it. It is possible to do so, but you're going to be going out about 2 feet at least from the trunk, digging down about, you're going to make a root ball. You might want to go online and look at how to transplant a dogwood or transplant any tree. You need to form the root ball, dig around, and then slowly lift it up, have your other hole ready to put it into, and compost to put on top. there's we're focusing on food today. Otherwise, I'd spend a long time telling you the step-by-step process. But take a look at the OSU fact sheets, and I know that they will post, all sides will post that on the Facebook page. And you can look at how you transplant a tree. It is, for a tree that large, a pretty specific process.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks, Ava.
Bye-bye.
Nancy in Granville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hi. I had another quick recipe for kale.
All right.
Good.
This is my mother's, and I use it all the time, and she's gone now. But instead of using cabbage when you cook corned beef and cabbage, you use kale, and you put in potatoes. You know, you cook your corned beef, and then you add in potatoes and onion and garlic and barley. And then towards the end, put lots of kale in and let it cook down. And, oh, my goodness, that is so good.
Sounds really good.
Yum.
Yeah, it is really, really
I
good.
I love barley.
I do too.
And you don't put much barley in, maybe just, you know, quarter of a cup or something. Okay. Goes a long way. I have a quick question, though. I have some fern leaf peonies that have already come up, and they're maybe about 4 to 6 inches tall. I would assume I better cover those tonight. Huh?
I would cover those. Mine are a foot tall.
Wow.
Yeah. Mine are up. They're up a foot, and I have buds on them.
Lots of full sun then, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
So those are, that's the one thing I am covering tonight, because my fern leaf peonies are close to my heart.
Me too. Yes, again, they come from my mother, from Iowa. So it was a really nice plant. So, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Arnie in West Jefferson, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
I have real heavy soil at my house, so I can't do potatoes real well. Mm-hmm. So I've tried doing the potatoes in a bucket, took a 55-gallon plastic drum and cut the two ends off, filled them with dirt and put potatoes in. And then as they grow up so much, you add a little more compost or dirt and you keep doing it in theory until they come out of the top. And then in the fall, you push the whole thing over and you have a bazillion potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Did it work?
It did not work. I think what I was doing was I had drilled holes in it so it would drain out. But I didn't put them in the bottom. I put them around the bottom, but on the sides. Mm-hmm. And so when I did dump it out, I would realize the top would dry out a lot. Mm-hmm. So I would water it a couple times a week. I thought, well, potatoes are heavy waterers anyway, so I'll just keep watering them. Well, it turns out I had about 3 inches of mud in the bottom.
Yeah, you rotted your potatoes.
Yeah, I didn't end up with just about as many as I planted is how many I got out of it. That wasn't a real good return on investment there.
I tend not to use something that's as solid as what you use. I use that wide open hardware cloth and put a good layer of compost on the bottom and soil and then the potatoes and then build up. And that way it freely drains. When you told me what you used, I'm thinking he rotted his potatoes. So try it with a different container or make mounds in the garden. I have a friend who just mounds lots of soil and then mounds and mounds and mounds up, and then he just puts his hand in to the soil compost mix and pulls out potatoes. It's amazing. So hopefully that will work for you.
Good luck, Arnie.
I think we may have lost him.
We lost Arnie, I guess. Thanks for telling us what not to do. We're going to take a break right now. When we return, we'll get to those calls. All of them look good. And we'll continue our conversation about what to plant and how to cook it this year. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I do have some emails to get to as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
After Sunday's long-awaited season premiere of Mad Men, fans of the show will be eager to talk about it. On the next Fresh Air, we talk all about the new episode with executive producer Matthew Weiner, who wrote it and created the show. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 44 degrees in downtown Columbus, mostly sunny skies today and a high near 50. Clear skies tonight, a low around 30 degrees. Sunshine for Tuesday with a high near 60, and there is a slight chance of rain Tuesday night, a low of 50 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center, presenting Capital Steps, celebrating 30 years of political satire, song parodies, and skits based on material pulled straight from the headlines. Friday, April 13th at the McCoy Center. Details at mccoycenter.org.
It's a new era of personalized gene-based medicine, and it's relevant to everyone. What are the moral dilemmas raised by this new technology? Watch Nova, Cracking Your Genetic Code, Wednesday night at 9 on WOSU-TV. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. We're talking about what to plant in your garden that's edible and what's good and when to cook it or when to plant it. So stay with us. So we've got some calls. We've got some emails. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Duncan from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Duncan.
Yes, hi. I just had one more comment about cooking kale or other greens like collards. They say that it's often best, even if you have it in your garden, to wait until after a frost, that the freezing changes some of the, I don't know, starches to sugars and sweetens it.
Yep.
So a lot of the kale and collards that we find in stores is from California or places where they haven't had a freeze. Mm. And I found that just by taking the greens and putting them in your freezer for a few hours and then bringing them out, it really tenderizes them and makes them cook more quickly and sweetens them.
Okay.
So.
I'll be darn.
Good tip.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Duncan. Right. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
And kale on review. Amber in Grandview, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
You want to talk about kale, too?
Yeah, actually, I am not a big fan of cooked vegetables, so I like to dehydrate kale in my food dehydrator. And then I toss it with olive oil, salt and pepper, or just salt, actually, and some nutritional yeast.
Yeah, someone mentioned to me once that kale chips are really good.
They're easy to make and really good.
So you just take the leaves and...
I just rip the leaves off of the stem, and I just throw them in the food dehydrator. It doesn't take long. And you can also do it in your oven if it goes down to 200. Mine is too old to do that, but...
Okay. All right. Thanks, Amber.
Thanks, bye.
Kale chips, yum.
I know. It's someone was describing it to me because I am on this mission to figure out how to eat more kale. All right. So I'm going to actually be, we'll talk about this another time. I am starting a new garden at my house, but not everybody has the space to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So not having a yard is no excuse for not growing your food.
Okay.
So.
We have organic crops in pots.
Okay.
We have vertical gardening, which Tricia mentioned over the break. It looks like gutters, and you can put them either on the side of the house or build a frame and grow up. In England, they're growing up all the time. They don't have the land that we do. We're spoiled here in the United States. We have lots of land. But if you're in an apartment and you have a balcony and you have some sun, you can grow either in a pot or in some type of vertical system. And if you have a fence that's doing nothing but sitting there and has a sunny side, you can espalier your apple trees, your raspberries, your plums. Plums are great. You need two different kinds, by the way, not just one. Otherwise, you won't get plums. So there's a lot of options for... space saving, food growing, and more things. And you know, either front yard, people say, I don't have any room in the backyard. So grow in the front yard. I've grown herbs in the front yard forever. And,
well, I was reading another article about how, you know, people tend to, in this country, tend to separate their gardens. Mm-hmm. And there's a trend going back a long time to combining them,
putting it all together.
Several edible landscaping pieces and stuff. I think Val Jorgensen out at her farm, she has all these little landscaped edible gardens all around her front yard. I think they're so charming.
And the Cox Arboretum has a huge area called the Edible Landscape Garden. So
there's some good examples out there of how you can do those.
So you can have it all, people. You can have it all.
Well, we think we can have it all.
Brittany in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Hi, nice segue, because I have rhubarb in my front yard that I want to transplant to the backyard.
You're right. So,
is
how do you
okay to do that? Do I have to wait until after it's done? When do I do that?
Well, I have killed rhubarb by moving it in the spring.
Oh dear. Okay, we won't.
Because I did not get down far enough. The roots of rhubarb really go down and out. So you actually are only taking a piece of the root when you move it. I would not move it now because our weather's so mercurial. It's if we get a cold, real cold snap after you move it, it's toast.
Okay.
The time that my mother-in-law digs her her rhubarb, she gave it to us in October.
Okay.
Yeah, October, November, digging it when it starts to go dormant and putting the roots in.
I was just going to say we have a wonderful recipe for rhubarb fool in this issue.
Oh, that's right. That's
right.
It's
just it's a really simple recipe. It's cooking down your rhubarb and adding just a splash of fresh squeezed orange juice to it and cooking it down till it is soft and then mixing it. My recommendation would be with some whipped Snowville cream and heavy cream, and then you just fold in the rhubarb, and you could put some crushed meringues or shortbread cookies, and it's a 10-minute dessert.
So wow.
Yum. That's how I like to use rhubarb.
So, Brittany,
One quick thing, Brittany. After I've said that, someone's going to call in and say, I move mine in spring with no problem. So the issue is that if we do get a frost, you do decide to move it. We get a frost, you really will have to cover it. And baby it and give it good compost this summer.
Okay. It's where it has been since we planted it 3 years ago.
Okay.
Do we need to cover it tonight or is it okay?
I'm not covering mine.
Okay. And when is it safest to harvest it? Somebody told me you had to wait 3 years after planting it before you harvested it to eat it.
I've heard 2 years. The first year, you really don't want to harvest it hard. You want it to send nutrients back to the roots.
Okay.
Second year, you harvest it light. Third year, go for it.
Okay, good. My 12-year-old is dying to harvest.
This is your year.
Yay!
Okay, Brittany.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
One of my favorite recipes with rhubarb is rhubarb cream pie.
Oh. I have a recipe from Tony's mom.
Uh-huh. So it's custard on top and then the meringue over that?
No, we don't do the meringue, but it's
just
incredible.
You know, why not whip on another 1,000 calories while you're at it?
But it's so good.
It is. It's one of my all-time favorites. And it didn't look really very appetizing when I first saw it at my husband's grandma's house one time.
It's the best.
And she said, you really should try that. I'm like, because I don't like that rhubarb strawberry thing.
I don't either.
I tried it, and I thought, is anybody else going to have any? It was as soon as I had my first bite, I went, had a conniption fit. We have an email from Sharon. For protection from frost in the spring, I remember from many years ago, my dad convinced my friend and I to make about 50 pirate hats out of newspapers to set over his tender plants. It's quick and easy and cheap and recyclable. Yeah. Just an idea to pass down.
Love
sounds
it.
Like something that a kid
cute.
Would like,
cute.
Right?
Yep.
What a great idea.
Yeah. Cute idea.
Yeah. Email from Robin. I am doing raised beds this year for tomatoes, peppers, and herbs, and maybe some leafy greens. What do you recommend for soil?
If you have good garden soil that you can transplant from another place that you've been stockpiling because you've taken turf off, that's great to use. Mix it with a lot of compost. There are also places here in town you can buy topsoil. Ohio Mulch, Mr. Mulch, I think Strader's, a whole bunch of places. Look in the book for topsoil. Ask what's in it, where it comes from, so you know what you're putting into your garden. But also add compost. Make that a nice, friable, wonderful mix since you're raising the bed to get it up above either compacted ground or whatever problem you're trying to get away from with raised beds.
And email from David, which Easy Care and Dramatic Result plants would you suggest for a small, full-sun, south-facing garden?
Easy Care Dramatic?
Yeah.
Okay, rhubarb
wow, David.
Is one of them.
I mean,
you know, if we're talking about food, rhubarb is one. Because once it's established, it is Easy Care. There's a whole list of Easy Care, quote-unquote, plants. Take a look at the book, The Nonstop Garden, for some ideas on Easy Care, if you're talking about perennials. But there are, and there's also an excellent book. I did not bring it with me. It's called Perennial Vegetables, so that you can have beauty and eat them at the same time. But and nothing's coming to mind right now.
Well, they're saying they would like to have large flowers, like, but they're talking about flowers.
Okay, if you're talking about flowers for the whole season, that's going to be another show. Please ask that question when I come back.
Yeah, we're going to have another show.
That's a huge question.
Okay. We have more kale calls.
I believe it. You know, there's people that love it or hate it, but we got to get the haters to love it.
I always think that you can convert everybody over mm-hmm. to a kale lover if you cook it correctly.
There's so many options, but I remember one show was about plants, and it ended up being about mosquitoes the whole time. Randy, at least we're still talking about plants. Randy in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Hello, thank you. When it comes to kale, something I've learned to do is I will, when I make fresh spinach dip, I will substitute the kale for the spinach.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will put mustard greens in for a lot of zest. And it has a much, much longer shelf life than spinach, which is a more frail, leafy plant.
I like it. Good idea.
Great kale idea. Spinach. Thank you, Randy.
Kale dip.
I'm going to put here spinach in parentheses so I'll know what I mean by that.
Lori and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Yeah, I just had another couple more kale recipes. I put kale in my bean soup.
Oh, so do I.
It's delicious. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And also, every morning I have a kale shake where I just put kale and some fruit, raspberries, a banana.
I've never done that.
Do you massage it or anything?
It's absolutely delicious. You don't even, because the banana and the pineapple and the raspberry, you don't even taste the kale at all.
Okay.
And it's so good for you.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, thanks.
Kale smoothie.
It's kale smoothie. Yeah. There you go. Three times a day. Bye-bye. Lee in Upper Arlington. Hi, Lee. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I just heard Deb mention growing fruit trees in the espalier fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved into my home here, there were three apple trees that clearly had at once been trained.
Mm-hmm.
And although I tried to get them back into shape, they've never produced much. And, well, I'm just wondering, how do I get them back into shape?
Not knowing what the soil is like, is it sun or shade?
Sun.
Okay, good. That's good. They probably have depleted the soil in that area. Have you been putting compost on the soil by any chance?
I always use leaf mold.
Okay, that's good. That's good. But they would also like, believe it or not, some hardwood mulch that is not dyed mixed in with some of that to give it more of a foresty, fungi-based soil. They really need a fungi-based soil. They probably need fertilizer for fruit trees. I like to use organic products for that. Please, so check out the Espoma products. And there's so many more. There's like Nature's This and Nature's That. And there's so much out there now. I need to do some experimentation to see which are, you know, I like the most. I've just, you know, a confirmed Espoma user. It might be the pruning that you are doing that is taking off the spur branches that produce the fruits. And that I would like to send you to, again, the Ohio State fact sheets. I think there is one on pruning fruit trees, and we'll talk about how to recognize which branches to cut and which branches not to cut. So that'll get you started. And then,
will that address the espalier fashion?
The espalier for fruit trees, what you're trying to do is bring it back, and you may have cut the wrong branches. And
okay.
Your fruiting branches, what we call spur branches. So take a look at the fact sheet on pruning fruit trees, and then I think there's one on espaliers. If not, I might put something up on Facebook for you on the All Sides page. It will be today or tomorrow.
Great.
Take a look, and I'll do a little bit of investigation. So you'll see, it says Lee, Upper Arlington, fruit trees.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Lee. Thanks for the call. Let's talk a little bit more about container gardening, or that the crop in a pot thing. Tricia, when you lived in New York, did you grow things like that?
I didn't. I saw a lot of it being done, though. We didn't have a little terrace, and if I had, I would have loved to have done that. But, you know, we saw all kinds of creative things from very focused on utilizing all the small spaces, all the little gardens. I love seeing that. I love seeing the unexpected when you just turn a corner and there's a little strip of land and somebody's taking care of it in a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. I love seeing vegetables growing in the city like that. So I hope that that's something with this issue that we inspire a little bit, is to look at the land around you and to see where you can put, you know, creative gardens in.
Yeah. One spring or one summer when somebody was in the hospital, I was visiting them at Riverside Hospital every day. And one of the funnest things I saw was someone had planted a bunch of tomatoes in the parking lots.
I know.
I loved that. It inspired a column when I was writing a column for
the Columbus Dispatch.
We have more questions, but let's see. I'm going to take Leslie. And hi, Leslie. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a raised bed organic garden, and it is absolutely covered in this terrible weed that has little tiny white flowers.
Oh, yeah. Mm. What is the name of that thing?
That is Harry Bittercress. So now that you've met Harry Bittercress.
It's everywhere. Is it edible?
It is, but I don't think it's very tasty.
Okay.
I think it would be
any redeeming
bitter.
Value to it?
Well, it would... You'd have to get it before it blooms. Once any of the cresses bloom, they're a brassicaceae, by the way. That's related to kale, which we've been talking about all morning.
Okay, right.
You have to get them out before they bloom. Go out there with a rake. They're probably already popping.
Oh,
We had so much warm.
Bloomed.
Well, it's a little bit late this year, but next year when it comes up in the winter and it's green, just take your hoe out there and hoe it up before it make seed, and then it becomes a green manure.
Why is there so much of it this year?
Because it makes a gazillion seeds, and you didn't know how many gazillion seeds you let come up in your garden or plant.
Because it was
such
a warm winter.
It was such a warm winter.
Okay.
Every doggone seed germinated.
I'm pretty sure you warned us about this.
I did
but
warn you about Harry Bittercress. I did.
Time. Okay, Leslie, good luck, because I hear you. Email question from Kevin. What crops are good to plant side by side to save space in a backyard garden? I know you could go on, but just...
Oh, companion garden. Companion gardening. Look at Louise Riotti, R-I-O-T-T-E, for Gardens Love Tomatoes, Roses Love Onions, for companion planting ideas. There are so many possibilities, and some plants that have a synergistic growth pattern, and some that actually are antagonistic. So you need to look at both of those. And I don't have enough. I don't have enough time.
We don't
to
have
go
enough time.
More.
But there you go, Kevin. We got to start.
That'll get you started.
Tricia Wheeler, thanks so much for joining
thanks
us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And congratulations on 2 years
Thank
with
you.
Edible Columbus. And also Deborah Kanapke. Deborah, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, it's
there
been
will
great.
Be more shows.
Yes,
there
I
will
hope
be
so.
More shows. So everybody,
we
hang
need
in
more
there.
Time.
Sorry, I couldn't get to all the calls. And but to everybody, thanks for listening and thanks for all your great questions and comments. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.